Good morning. 6.5 minutes past 9 o'clock. I'm John Munson, sitting in for Kathleen Dunn today on the Ideas Network. It's Friday, the 9th of November. This hour, we're going to talk about proposed new ownership rules for broadcasters being proposed at the Federal Communications Commission. They're holding a hearing in Seattle, Washington today. They've been holding hearings all across the United States for, probably about a year. And the hearings have been dubbed kind of the localism hearings. They're looking at a number of issues. Two main issues dominate the hearings thus far. We have cross-ownership rules, where broadcasters and newspapers want to be able to own each other. If you own a newspaper, you can't own a radio or TV station in the same market. That's a current rule. But broadcasters want that to be changed so that newspapers could own radio stations or TV stations, and TV stations could own newspapers or radio stations could own newspapers. The other rule that that broadcasters want to see changed is to enable ownership of more than one television station in some markets. Right now, you can't own two TV stations in the same market, although there are ways around that, as viewers in Duluth found out when their CBS affiliate was gobbled up and eventually ended up under the control of the company that owns the NBC affiliate. And so there have been some ways to get around that, but generally you can't own two TV stations in the same market. Well, the Federal Communications Commission is proposing to change that rule. Not everybody is happy about it. Consumer groups don't think this is a good idea. Some in Congress don't think it's a good idea. The commissioner of the Federal Communications Commission, the head guy, is trying to get rules passed by sometime in December. Several members of Congress, including a prominent Republican Trent Lott, have requested a delay, and they're not convinced that the arguments being made at the FCC should carry the day. So there's a lot of controversy out there. One of the questions is, has the marketplace changed enough so that the old rules that radio and TV stations have operated under since 1996 are no longer relevant? Is that true? Does the fact that there are now literally thousands of other ways to get information from various websites and so forth, does that mean that it's okay to just allow radio and TV stations to be controlled by just a few companies? It's an open debate, and we invite your participation in it today. Here are the phone numbers to call to join the discussion. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. If you're in Milwaukee, please use 227-2050, 227-2050. Joining us to help sort this all out is Robert McChesney, professor of the Institute of Communications Research and the Graduate School of Information and Library Science at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. He's also the host of the radio show Media Matters, broadcast on WILL AM. Good morning, Professor McChesney. Thanks for taking time to join us today.
My great pleasure to do so.
The first question I have for you is, what's the main point of all the attempts to change the rules at the Federal Communications Commission? What's the ultimate aim of those who want to see the rules changed?
Well, it's being driven by large media conglomerates that want to be able to get bigger and bigger, have less competition and make more money, and they're pressuring politicians and regulators to deliver the goods for them. Were this pressure not coming, there would be absolutely no momentum to do this whatsoever. There's no one in the general population who thinks this is a good idea and is pushing for it. It's coming almost entirely from a very small number of very large, rich corporations.
The FCC has been holding hearings there. I understand that the law allows them to hold hearings with 5 days public notice, and that's been exactly what citizens have been getting. There have been complaints that this isn't enough notice, and so certain groups have had trouble getting to various places to testify. The chairman of the Federal Communications Commission seems to really be in a hurry to get these rules passed. Meanwhile, some in Congress have said, hey, wait a minute, we'd like to take a look at this. What do you think will happen if the rules are passed? Speculate a little bit. What's Congress going to do?
Well, let's back up for 1 second and just go through what you were just talking about a little more detail. What happened is that the Federal Communications Commission tried to change the rules in 2003, which led to a firestorm of protests. Literally 3 million people contacting Congress or the FCC that year to protest the idea of letting fewer media companies on more and more. And as a result of that firestorm of public protests, the Congress and later the courts overturned the 3-2 vote in the FCC to relax most of the media ownership rules. And the FCC agreed so that to get Congress off its back, that before it would change any media ownership rules in the future, it would hold public hearings to actually do a legitimate effort to gauge what the public thinks of the idea of who should own the media and how many government monopoly licenses for radio, TV, and cable and telephone franchises a single company should be allowed to have in the community or nationally. And that's why we have these public hearings. It's a result of public pressure 4 years ago, which really left the FCC in a position where it had no choice. And that we've gotten these 6 hearings so far. The last one's taking place today in Seattle. Again, your comment is really worth pondering. The chair of the FCC, Kevin Martin, who's a Republican, who was on the FCC 4 years ago under Michael Pollan when they tried to relax the media ownership rules then, it's difficult to really express in the English language the contempt he's shown for the process. I mean, he's given bare minimum notice. He schedules them usually in the middle of the workday, not always in very easy places to get. He goes to these meetings he's required to go to and steadfastly ignores what everyone there says. And the overwhelming sentiment at these, an opinion at these public hearings he's had so far is literally 500,000 people showing up with hardly any notice because they're so eager to talk about their concerns about local media. And he's hearing it at every single one, overwhelming opposition to the idea of letting one company own all the media in a single town, that would be a very bad thing. He's hearing some extraordinary concerns about local journalism. He's hearing extraordinary concerns about the lack of minority voices in local media. And so what he's doing is, when you understand it in that context, is even more striking, that he is simply on a mission to change these rules to serve the benefactors of his party and of his political career, possibly, in a way that is nothing short of reckless.
If we spin the clock back even farther, at one time, radio and TV station ownership was regarded quite a bit differently than it is now. For example, if you owned a radio station, you actually had to work there. You had to be present. You had to operate the station yourself. This prevented multiple ownership in most cases because if you try to have stations in multiple cities, it's pretty hard to get around to them all and operate them as the owner. Those rules kind of went away in the 70s and 80s, and there's been a steady decline in the number of regulations that broadcasters have had to face. And then after the Telecommunications Act of 1996, the rewrite of the original Telecommunications Act, there has been a tremendous amount of consolidation in radio and television ownership. Broadcast organizations, the National Association of Broadcasters and various state broadcasting associations have said, well, look, the marketplace is changing. It's impossible for mom-and-pop stations to survive. And the only way for broadcasters to compete against all the other media that are available now that weren't available years ago is to get big. You either get big or go home.
Well, your question, which is prefaced by a long statement, contains a lot of really interesting and valuable information. It's worth pondering. You know, we have a commercial broadcasting system in the United States, and the deal is that private commercial concerns get these monopoly broadcast licenses at no charge or at a nominal filing fee at most. And in exchange for these extraordinarily lucrative monopoly privileges, theoretically, broadcasters will broadcast in the public interest. They'll do something they wouldn't do if they were purely a profit-making concern. And as a rule, in general, in American history, our standards for broadcasters to meet the public interest has been very low. It hasn't been a high point of American media history. The one rules that we've had, a set of rules we've had in this country that have been important for broadcast regulation have been media ownership rules. There's been a strong understanding from the 1920s for decades that it would be inappropriate if there were only a limited number of these government monopoly franchises for radio stations, for TV stations, for cable systems, to let one company have all the government monopoly franchises. That would be bad for a democratic society and a free society. So we had fairly strict ownership rules that limited the number of these government monopoly licenses to radio, TV, and cable systems that a single company could have, and tried to limit the number in a particular community so you would not have company-town media. And the big companies chafed at this. They chomped at the bit. They hated these rules. They fought against them without any luck for decades because the small station owners knew they couldn't survive without them. Once those rules were left, they'd get swallowed up by the big guys because they couldn't compete with some huge giant. And the great bulk of the American people, almost all of them, liked the idea of having local owners and multiple owners. Finally, as you pointed out, the pressure pushed and pushed. The ownership rules were slowly relaxed in the 1980s and into the 1990s. And then in 1996, in the Telecommunications Act, they were relaxed a great deal, especially for radio in particular. And that was done in the most corrupt manner imaginable, literally two paragraphs added to the 1996 Telecommunications Act, which gutted the ownership rules for radio stations that weren't debated in Congress, weren't debated at the committee level. Those two paragraphs we now know were written by the National Association of Broadcasters. Even members of the committee that drafted this legislation in Congress were unaware of these paragraphs or even in the bill when it went into law. It was an astonishing corruption. And it led to the devastation of commercial radio in this country. As we've seen huge companies grow up that now own over a thousand stations. And we've seen the real demise of localism on radio, the most local of all our media. Now, as this process has taken place, and you're right, the commercial broadcasters have argued, well, the times have changed now. Now there's all this competition, particularly from the Internet and the World Wide Web, that these restrictions on the number of radio and TV stations no longer make sense. We can't compete unless we can have enormous local monopolies. Because these stations really don't have the same power they once did, the same importance they once did. Now we've got all this powerful new competition with the Internet, and we can't hold our own anymore. And this is really speaking out of both sides of their mouth, if you think about it. We're supposed to think these stations are no longer so valuable, yet then they're spending a fortune trying to gobble up all of them. Well, if they're not that valuable anymore because of all this so-called new competition, then why don't these broadcasters give up their licenses and start websites, which are a lot cheaper? They can sell off their stations to local people. They're really convinced the web is such a great threat to their modus operandi. In fact, they don't think that. That's why they know there's immense profitability in having local monopoly media markets where you own basically most of the radio stations, several television stations, the local daily newspaper, and the cable system. You can get that sort of company town media, and that's what this is all about. You've got the cash register singing like Beethoven, the Ninth Symphony, because you have one newsroom serving all the media in a town, very little competition for news. You have no competition for advertisers. You've got it made in the shade. That's what this is all about. And the argument there are all these plethora of websites, they're going to set us free, and we don't have to worry about that monopolistic power. That might be true, 100 years from now or 50 years from now. We don't know, but it's certainly not true today, and it's not true for the visible future. And again, if websites are such a great threat to their business model, then they should all go start doing websites and let local people have the radio and TV channels.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we have some callers who'd like to join us. Let me give the numbers again. Because we do have some lines available if you'd like to call in. 800-486-8655. In Milwaukee, it's 227-2050. What do you think? Would you like to see more concentration of ownership? Would it bother you if a newspaper owned a radio or a TV station? In some markets, it's already true, and those were sort of grandfathered in. But what should two TV stations in the same market have the same owner? Do you feel your local broadcasters are really local? Do they serve your local needs? What do you think? 800-486-8655, 227-2050, the numbers to call. We'll take your calls, and we'll be back in just a moment. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network. 22 after 9. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Well, after 4 o'clock today, it's time for Your Views on the News with host Ben Marins and guest Mordecai Lee. Call in with your choice for the news story that got your attention this week. That's after 4 today on the Ideas Network. This hour, we're talking about proposed rules that the Federal Communications Commission is developing regarding ownership of radio and television stations. And our guest on the telephone this morning is Robert McChesney, professor of the Institute of Communications Research and the Graduate School of Information and Library Sciences at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. And one of the things I wanted to bring up, Professor McChesney, a key rule that was changed in the 80s was one that that affected how often or in what kind of calendar frame a license for a radio or television station could be sold. My understanding is that at one time, if you bought a radio or TV station license, you had to hang on to it for, 3 to 5 years, something like that. And that tended to keep speculators out of the market. That rule, I believe, changed right around 1980 or a little bit after, maybe the early 80s under the Reagan administration, their drive to deregulate things. And all of a sudden, TV and radio station licenses sort of became trading stamps, and the prices for stations increased dramatically. Are we still feeling the effects of that rule change in terms of where we ended up going with consolidation?
Well, certainly we are, and it's part of this broader process of a complete unraveling of any sort of standards of public interest regulation. And, you know, John, what I would add is we still have deregulation is a misnomer. We have as much regulation as ever today, and even if Kevin Martin gets his way, we'll have as much regulation as we ever have tomorrow because they're still giving out monopoly licenses. When they use the term deregulation in this issue, what they mean simply is re-regulation on behalf of the largest corporate interests, because there'll still be monopoly licenses for radio, TV, and cable. There's simply going to be fewer companies going to own more and more of these limited number of monopoly franchises. So there's nothing deregulating. It's not like all of a sudden you and I can go start radio stations or TV stations wherever we want. We aren't going to have that option. Fewer and fewer people are going to have that power. And this is all part of the corruption of the process that's taken place as people have played less and less of a role in involvement in the crucial media policies. And the policies have been made behind closed doors by well-heeled, powerful corporate lobbies that pay careful attention. And the really other side of the story here, which you talked about at the beginning of the show, is that the fight has been engaged. The battle has been joined. Starting in 2003, Americans from across the political spectrum, left and right, liberal, conservative, have said, no, enough of this. This corrupt policymaking has got to stop. We can't just give away the public assets to these powerful lobbies who want to set up monopoly media empires, bombard us with advertising, and strip out the journalism from local communities. And this fight started in 2003. It's being engaged now. That's why Kevin Martin, for all his work at the SEC to try to deliver the goods to local media monopolists, is probably not going to get it through. Just yesterday in the U.S. Senate, there was a hearing held, and it was overwhelming, both Republicans and Democratic senators saying this, what Kevin Martin's doing, is an absolute outrage. It's an insult to the American people. It's an insult to Congress. And they proposed a new law. And, I mean, again, to give a sense of this coalition, the joint sponsors include Trent Lott of Mississippi with Byron Dorgan of North Dakota.
Don't see that very often.
And, you know, but the point is that this is a non-starter. This is not really a left-right issue. This is simply whether you're on the side of a handful of really wealthy corporations that want to set up media monopolies around the country because it's so profitable, or you're on the side of everyone else. And so the public outcry here is what's so different this decade from in the 80s and 90s. In the 80s and 90s, when all those changes you've talked about were made, they simply went by 99.999% of the American people. I mean, literally, you weren't in the broadcast industry yourself, working in the trade and reading the trade press. You had no idea those things were taking place. There weren't radio shows on Wisconsin Public Radio about media ownership in 1983 or 1991 or 1995. There are today, lots of them, and there are all over our more enlightened media that cover public affairs. Bill Moyers probably covers it 20 times a year on his program. And the reason is people really do care. They understand how important it is. That if you've got local company town media with one company owning everything, you're going to see a real deterioration of local journalism. Communities of color in this country, minority ownership has absolutely plummeted with the relaxation of media ownership rules. And people of color in this country are rising up in tremendous anger that the idea that they're going to basically allow a handful of companies to gobble up all the media so their communities won't have any local coverage in media whatsoever to speak of.
Let's take a call. We'll go first to Boyd in Milwaukee. Boyd, good morning. Thanks for calling.
Good morning, John, and good morning, Mr. McChesney. This is certainly a very vital issue. I think it's the biggest threat to our democracy. And I guess I just want to rephrase my question a little bit. You mentioned that there was maybe no such thing as deregulation or as regulation. I believe that's what you said. Do you think, though, there can ever be a way where you can have it where multiple companies will be able to have a media, own media companies like they did in the early 80s until Ben Bagdikian in his book The Media Monopoly had said the number of companies are dwindling and dwindling. Are we ever maybe one day going to see a change of that with anything with new forms of media coming out like the internet and things such as that? Or do you think it's going to possibly... It may not. With people at least having a backlash, I think we probably have hit rock bottom, and we can only go up from here on out. What do you think?
I'm very optimistic that we're going to win this media ownership fight. It's going to require people to really make their points very clear to Congress, not to let the FCC get away with the shenanigans. I mean, two of the five members of the FCC, Michael Koff and Jonathan Adelstein, are steadfastly opposed to the secret nature of this. They've issued letters of protest saying this is outrageous, and they've been out front saying we have to have a full open system before we change these rules, and Congress has made that clear, too. So I think we're going to actually stop Kevin Martin if we all come together, and I'd urge you and other listeners to the show to go to the website freepress.net, and you'll find all the information. Even if you're in favor of concentration, you'll find articles there that will support it. So you'll find what you can do, and you'll learn what exactly is going on to deal with this process. But the broader question, Boyd, that you raise is, what can we do to make it better? I think that's the next turning point. That's really where the whole media reform movement's turning now. Rather than simply put our finger in the dike and try to arrest the process briefly of consolidation and the deterioration of journalism at both the local and national level, what can we do to actually improve the situation? So we're having a proactive debate, and I think that's really where we're turning now. How can we use these new technologies not as an excuse to allow old dinosaur conglomerates to increase monopoly power, but talk about using new technologies in a way to enhance local media and enhance communication system? And I think that's the discussion we've got to have. The one thing we know for sure, though, is that allowing these huge, giant companies to set up company-town media shops all across the country to really gut local journalism is not a step in the right direction. It's not a good thing. And it allows these companies to increase their political leverage than our politicians, and which makes it that much more difficult to come up with proactive, positive reforms.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Boyd. 800-486-8655, 227-2050 are the numbers to join us. We just had a line open up for you, so you can join the discussion. Let's go next to Peter in Madison. Peter, good morning.
Hi. Prior to getting on the air, I was doing a quick Google search on this issue, and among the things I found out is how much this is almost like a reflection about everything that's happening in American society today. I saw that Clear Channel Communications, who used to be the poster child for gobbling up radio stations, up to, I think it was over 1,200 radio stations, is now itself about to this year be bought up by private equity firms. And if you know anything about the trend towards private equity firms, it was written up in Business Week, it is absolutely tenacious with the pressure on CEOs to squeeze out profits out of every possible conceivable way. And the interests of the American citizens is only understood when the American public can understand the issues. The idea that we have this diversity of opinions is pretty irrelevant when the opinions that matter are those that are on the large corporate interests, like CNN, ABC, and NBC News, that when they don't air issues, we end up with a democracy which is more partitioned into what you want to see. So you can go to blog sites and everything on the Internet and constantly keep in your same frame of mind, whether it be the KKK or Mother Jones. You stay stuck in a world in which you can seek out information, but it can tend to be towards your own particular interest. And I remind people who brought us two of the biggest, most catastrophic changes in terms of corporate dealings, the 1996 FCC remakeover under Bill Clinton and NAFTA under Bill Clinton, and how that is reflected in what people are worried about Hillary Clinton and her ties to corporations and the amount that has been given to her, and that we're not going to see realistic change unless we seek solutions outside of, you know, these corporate needs from private equity firms on through.
I think you're raising some great points there. And about the private equity firms, I think this follows up on John's point about how the changes in regulations from the 70s and 80s have really sort of taken away the notion that owners of broadcasting should be local, should be committed to their community, should participate in the actual act of broadcasting, not be absentee landlords. Because now we've seen the complete de-evolution of that concept to where, as you pointed out, these private equity firms are now gobbling up media, not just in the United States, but around the world. They own most of the media now in the country of New Zealand, for example. And these private equity firms are largely anonymous, shadowy groups that are privately held. Oftentimes, you know almost nothing about them or very little about them. And their business model is basically to strip the parts, make as much money in the short term, make a killing, then let go. And it's highly dubious that this is at all an appropriate form of ownership, but this is the way our media system is unraveled. The point you made, Peter, too, about the Internet is well worth taking. You know, really the bottom line here, why we care about media, is that it's necessary for self-government. It's necessary to protect our freedoms, to protect the system from being effective. That's what's at stake here. And as much as I love the Internet, and I do, I mean, I live on the Internet almost to a fault, it does not magically solve our problems for us. The Internet does not do journalism. It doesn't wave a magic wand over journalism bank accounts and creates all sorts of in-depth quality journalism, either the national or local or international level. And that's been one of its problems. So you can go on the Internet and get lots of blogs, lots of viewpoints, a wealth of information and background information. It's astonishing at a certain level. But, you know, you aren't going to find a lot of in-depth reporting that's created online because there aren't the resources to do it there. And still, most of the guts of the real journalism online originates in old media because they still have a business model which generates it. And much of that originates really at this point from newspapers, print media. And that's the crisis we face. We've got to come up with ways to generate real journalism. And we can't. The one thing we know for certain, absolutely in the short term, is that when you allow concentrated ownership, especially at the local level, it leads rationally to an immediate cut in resources to journalism. And these private equity firms go in there with the same glee Dick Cheney looks at a map of the Middle East. I mean, they strip that newsroom as quickly as possible because they're out to make a quick killing. And so we've got to stop the bleeding. And one way we stop the bleeding is we do not allow monopolists to take over our local media community markets.
Is multiple ownership the real culprit behind the stripping of the newsrooms, or was it the fact that at one point the federal government decided that radio and TV stations no longer had to prove that they were operating in the public interest? I know because I was a broadcaster in the 60s and 70s, that radio stations had to keep very specific records about how much time they spent on each type of programming. There were actual requirements for hours or minutes of news coverage, for public affairs programming and various other things, including religious programming. And those kind of went away. And the first thing that happened was, well, news doesn't make us enough money. Let's get rid of the news department. And maybe we'll keep the wire service. And whoever is our morning drive disc jockey can rip and read if we need something. But it seems to me that it was more than just consolidation that tended to kill the radio newsroom. I'll just say the radio newsroom because that's what I have some experience in. This trend started to happen before consolidation, didn't it?
You're absolutely right. It's a crucial factor. The only thing I would add to your analysis, John, is that broadcasters still are legally required to fulfill the public interest. That hasn't changed. That's still very much the law of the land. Those monopoly licenses that commercial and public broadcasters, for that matter, get are premised on the idea that these broadcasters will do something in the public interest. They're not simply out to maximize profit in the case of a commercial broadcaster. What's changed is the interpretation of what that public interest is, and that's been gutted in the last 30 or 40 years, basically to be utterly meaningless at this point in time. But that doesn't mean it's legally the way it has to be. Today, for example, it's easier for a broadcast station to renew its gazillion-dollar value broadcast license. It's easier to renew its broadcast license, keep its monopoly, than it is for you or me to renew our driver's license. I mean, it's patently absurd. They've totally stripped out the spirit of the law, which requires a genuine sort of review of broadcasters to make sure they are serving the public. And if they aren't, you're supposed to give the license to someone who's willing to do so. Well, now there's no criteria, so they might as well just wave everyone through without even pausing to give the pretense of caring about the public interest. But the law is still very much on the side of the public interest. But you're right, it's not simply consolidation. But we do know this much. The evidence does show concentrated media markets, more concentration, the less resources go to local journalism. So we can control that right now. And that's something that's really, that's what's in the batter's box. That's what's facing the pitcher right now. That's what we're looking at, which is a strong effort by the biggest companies and the private equity firms to be able to gobble up all the media in a single community. They want to own 3 TV stations, 8 or 10 radio stations, the cable system, the phone, the ISP, and the daily newspaper. And they look at that and they see an opportunity to make money that's off the charts. One newsroom serving the entire community, stripped down, no competition, no competition for advertisers, total control, tremendous profits in the near term. And, of course, what it means for the community is probably not at all something people in the community are going to want, but they'll have no say in the matter. And that's what we're opposing, and that's something we can fight back and stop now.
800-486-8655, 800-486-8655 is the toll-free number to call. We do have some lines available for you right now. 227-2050 if you're calling us from Milwaukee, 227-2050. We're talking about proposed changes in media ownership rules and a hearing that's taking place out in Seattle today. It's the last hearing before the Federal Communications Commission sits down and takes a vote on these new rules, and the commissioner of the FCC wants to have this vote before December 18th. People in Congress, both Republicans and Democrats, aren't happy about it. Consumer groups are up in arms. A lot of people opposed to this. Broadcasters would like to see the ownership rules changed. They say it reflects the changes in the economy and in the marketplace, and that anybody who is against these has just got the blinders on. That's the language used in one column that I read as I was preparing for today's broadcast. And we have with us to help kind of figure this out and work our way through all of the information. There's no shortage of information out there on this. Some of it's good, some of it's not so good. We have Robert McChesney, professor at the Institute of Communications Research and the Graduate School of Information and Library Science at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. Or is it Champaign-Urbana? Who cares, right? And he's also the host of the radio show Media Matters on WILL Radio. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll take some more phone calls. We've got some people who are waiting to talk with our guests and express their opinion on this. You could be next. 800-486-8655-227-2050. I'm John Munson. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 942. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Well, after 10 o'clock this morning, coming up next hour, we'll be talking about the unmasking of King Tutankhamun against the backdrop of Egyptian history and culture. King Tut. After 10 o'clock this morning here on the Ideas Network. This hour, we're talking about media ownership and proposed changes in media ownership rules, a hearing being held out in Seattle by the Federal Communications Commission, there were a number of hearings held across the country. They plan to vote on these rules by December 18th, according to the head of the Federal Communications Commission. There's a lot of opposition out there, and we're talking about that whole topic this hour. I want to take a call next from Bill in Appleton. Bill in Appleton, let's go to you next, and good morning. Thanks, Bill.
Good morning. I just have a little bit different take on it, I guess, and I can understand why people would be afraid of, well, let's say, Rush Limbaugh or Ted Kennedy owning every TV or radio station in the country, and I can understand that argument, but I don't think it matters who owns the stations. I think what matters is who listens. These companies, they give the public what they want. They're in business. That's what they have to do. I mean, if the ratings aren't there, they're going to go out of business. That's just common sense. The reason they want to own more companies, the reason they want to own more stations is not to, control politically or whatever, control what goes on as far as the media is concerned. The reason they want to own more than one station is control their costs, just like any other business. If you have, one IT department and one accounting department and so forth, your costs are going to be cheaper, and that's just good common sense and good business. So, again, I don't think it's the problem isn't who owns the company. The problem is the public that doesn't demand better programming. I mean, if the ratings aren't there for whatever program it is, the show will go off the air. Or the newspaper will go out of business, that's what controls what gets on the air.
Professor McChesney?
Well, that's a great point that Bill raises, one I deal with a lot in all my research and in my books, because it's such an obvious point that people raised and an important point. I'd answer that two ways. First of all, there's nothing given in our Constitution that will turn over the public airwaves to commercial benefactors to make as much money as possible. Most other countries in the world haven't done all that. We don't turn all our airwaves over for commercial use. That's not a given. That's a public decision. And when the public makes that decision, it has the right to put conditions on it, much like we have the right to put conditions on the use of national parks or national forests or public highways. Secondly, Bill's argument about giving the people what they want and how the market exercises discipline over commercial concerns is true in a competitive marketplace. But the whole point we're talking about here is highly concentrated, oftentimes duopolistic or monopolistic markets. And all economic theory shows that when you move from competitive markets to concentrated markets, the power in the market shifts from the consumer to the producer. It's one of the great appeals to having concentrated markets. You have less risk, less direct competition. It gives you more power to produce what makes the most money for you, and consumers have less leeway, less resources to go against your wishes. And we see that in the case of journalism. I mean, the evidence is striking and it's clear that when you have fewer owners in a community, they quickly gut journalism. The more owners, the more resources to journalism. I think that the concern here is concentrated markets. Monopoly takes the risk and competition away from the big companies, makes them more profitable, and reduces the ability of consumers to exercise control over the market.
What about Bill's point regarding economies of scale? Do large corporations really achieve those economies, or is there some administrative overhead built in that actually makes it more difficult to make a profit?
Well, they get economies of scale. Obviously, if they get bigger and bigger, they can spread their costs out more and more. But in the case of radio, for example, there is no evidence that you need to own 1,000 radio stations to sort of spread your costs out. The cost of actually producing a quality radio signal, and John, you would know this as well as anyone if you've been in the industry as long as you have, has actually plummeted with digital technologies. It's the actual cost of putting out a high-quality signal in a community, the technical cost of running a legitimate radio station is probably lower now in real terms than it's been in American history. So there's no real technological or economic reason you need to own 1,000 stations. The reason why company wants to own 1,000 stations is that it gives you tremendous monopoly power. So you can have more control over advertisers. You can run more cheap material that you flood from central headquarters throughout the country, and you can make more profits in the near term. But it's not driven by the fact that if you could only own one or two stations, you'd go out of business. You know, there weren't any radio stations really shuttering their doors or TV stations. There aren't now, any more than there are newspapers shuttering their doors. This isn't about the most rational use of economic resources for society. It's about very powerful corporations using their corrupt lobbying power to change rules so they can have more monopoly power and make more money. The public be damned.
The when we talk about profits in broadcasting, I saw some information a number of years ago. I don't know how current this is, but I do know that at one point the average net profit and for a radio station in the United States was anywhere between 12% and 29% per year. Meanwhile, the average Main Street business had a net profit ratio in a good year of about 3%, and most, for example, retail grocery was working on a 1% margin. So broadcasting has been profitable and apparently continues to be so. Otherwise, people wouldn't be in it. But I did note that Clear Channel is trying to sell its small and media market clusters, presumably because they don't make enough money.
Yeah, that's right. And I think you're seeing the same phenomenon in newspapers. The newspaper margins, which for the last 100 years have been, by all accounts, these are local newspaper monopolies in almost every community with just a handful of exceptions, have been the highest rates of return in the country for almost any industry. And now they've come down a bit because they're losing revenues to the Internet. But they're still all making money. But the profits have come down again. The investors are saying, well, maybe newspapers aren't the investment they used to be. So they're sort of reconsidering whether they want to sell their assets and selling off some of their papers. But they're still quite profitable in their own right.
Well, look what happened to Knight Ridder, a family-owned corporation for many years, but investors forced them to break it up. And yeah, it wasn't that they weren't profitable, but they weren't profitable enough.
That's right. I mean, I think investors in both broadcast and newspapers got very spoiled with extraordinary rates of return, again, guaranteed by monopolistic markets and monopoly licenses granted by the government.
Let's go back to the phones and take a call from Bob in West Dallas. Bob, thanks for being patient.
Yes. First of all, amen to our guest today. I believe that everything he says is very much on target. The picture I'd like to have you all remember is if you ever saw the old Norman Rockwell painting of the gentleman standing up in a town meeting, making his feelings known, a very plainly dressed man. And this is the way democracy used to operate in this country very, very much. It was a person face-to-face type of thing. That has been replaced now by multimedia, either through newspapers or through our, particularly our radio in the last few years, Wisconsin Public Radio being a great example. When these media sources are taken over and effectively cutting off the average person from their opportunity to let their feelings be known, it certainly diminishes democracy and the type of country that we all respect. So I very much in favor of your continuing your work to open up the airwaves, which are publicly owned, to all people without regard to the amount of money that they own.
Well, I appreciate your comments, Bob, very much. And the good news for you is that millions of Americans feel the same way you do, that we've got serious problems with this media system. It's created by government policies and subsidies. The problem is that these policies and subsidies are made secretively behind closed doors, and what we have to do is put them out in the public, like this media ownership rule, so the public can weigh in. And when the public gets involved, good things tend to happen. And I think we're seeing a rise of a major movement that's really concerned not just about broadcast ownership, but about the efforts to privatize the Internet, the efforts to sort of marinate our children's brains in advertising, and the gutting of journalism in our commercial media system. All these things are great concerns, and I'd urge listeners who share your concerns and my concerns to go to the website, freepress.net. This is the leading group that's organizing on media ownership and other issues. And you can follow the issues there. You don't have to agree with me to go there and to get involved. You can have your own opinion or develop a contrary opinion. But I think you'll find the website as an extraordinary resource to keep you every day involved as much as you want to be on all the crucial issues about who owns the media and with what effect in this country.
Thanks for the call, Bob. Let's go to Paul in Door County. Paul, good morning.
Great topic. In response to Bill's statements, to elaborate on that a little more, what about diversity of opinion? These corporations, they also have stake in defense contracts, et cetera, et cetera. When you have just one entity controlling everything everybody hears, that's dangerous, and it's the single biggest threat to our democracy. Now, for my point, I don't know if the guest is aware of a situation out in the West, rural West. I don't know if it was Idaho or North Dakota, somewhere out there. It was a small town that had a chemical spill. Clear Channel had bought up all their local radio stations, six of them. And when emergency government contacted them to put an alert out to stay inside and close their windows, there's no one there to answer the phone.
So, yes, I'm aware of that, Paul. It was in Minot, North Dakota, about 5 years ago. It's now become a fairly famous story because it talks about what happens when you have one company own all the radio stations and it's an absentee owner. And what they did is they have robots who basically do all the broadcasting on the nine stations. They don't have living humans in this community anymore. And that's the tragedy of our corrupt media ownership laws. That radio, which is by far the best local medium we have, it's cheaper than doing a good website to have a good radio station. Has become, because of our corrupt lawmaking, become a plaything for private equity firms to build these massive empires. So I think your point is very well taken. And I think your first point, too, Paul, is worth repeating. When we're talking about the media system, we're talking about freedom of the press, the bias has to be towards diversity, not monopoly. Commercial arguments have to always take a secondary argument to the primacy of having diversity of viewpoints being heard so you can have self-governance. The reason why we have the First Amendment, if you read, as I have, the founders as they discussed freedom of the press, especially Jefferson and Madison, they were obsessed with it. And they understood that having a diversity of well-funded alternative viewpoints was the foundation to make the whole constitutional system work. And that was far more important than investors making money in media industries. That was the last thing they cared about, frankly. They cared first and foremost about there being a viable press system that would offer a diverse range of viewpoints. And if you had a press system that simply made fortunes for owners of media in 1792 but did not deliver the goods in terms of marketplace of ideas and diversity of viewpoints, they would have considered it an abject failure.
Let's take a call next from Michael in Oregon. Michael, good morning.
Good morning. I've been listening for about probably 10, 15 minutes. And it strikes me that your guest is using the word media to include only the broadcast media. And here's my problem. I cannot see anything here that ties in media ownership with the way they operate or don't operate in the public interest. And I'm not sure why, if we're talking about broadcast media only, which I gather you are, because nobody's advocating that the government gets into regulating print media, I think. I can't see why if the public interest rules, the law on broadcasting in the public interest was strictly enforced, why it would matter a hoot who owns a particular TV station or radio station.
Well, let's let our guest have a chance to answer. We've only got about a minute left on the program. So, Professor McChesney? Give it a shot.
Not sure I entirely follow the question, but let me just say from the best I can gather, I think that it does matter that you have diverse. I mean, all the evidence shows that multiple owners are better than few owners whenever possible in media. And so it does make a difference. The research shows if you've got 25 owners of radio stations in a community rather than three owners of eight radio stations each in a community, you're going to be much more likely to have diversity in content, diverse communities in the local market who get paid attention to. That's what the research shows. That's what the evidence shows. If you have three owners, usually based in some different distant state, part of a far-flung empire, you're more likely to get inexpensive syndicated fare. So the number of owners does matter. Is that the only issue that matters? should be concerned about? No. That's part of a much bigger picture. But it's an important part, and it's one that we can't abandon at this point in time.
Professor McChesney, thank you very much for spending the hour with us today. If you could maybe speculate for about 25 seconds here, what's going to happen after these hearings are done?
Well, you're going to see the FCC under Kevin Martin make a mad dash to try to change the ownership rules. You'll see Congress oppose it, and you'll probably see an effort by Martin to get a compromise measure through that will serve. You'll deliver some goodies to some of the big benefactors of the Bush administration to let them have some monopolies in a few times, but understand you can't win the whole enchilada.
Thank you very much.
My great pleasure, John.
Robert McChesney, professor at the Institute of Communications Research and the Graduate School of Information and Library Sciences at the University of Illinois. This program was produced by Rhonda Fanning, with on-air production by Mimi Notstein and Bill Estes. If you would like to listen to it again, you can go to the website WPR.org. If you'd like to own a copy, you can call the radio store at 747-800-747-7444 and ask for program 119D, as in deregulation. I'm John Munson, sitting in for Kathleen Dunn this week. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.